had some marks and I liked it. A friend of the proletariat. I read some marks just to try it. Hope Adam Smith don't mind it. It felt so wrong, it felt so right. Men of the working class unite. I read some marks and I liked it. I liked it.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And I'm joined by David Ruscio, who is a professor of economics at Notre Dame University. His books include Economic Representations, Both Academic and Everyday, Postmodern Moments in Modern Economics, and his latest, which will be out soon, Rethinking Planning, Development, and Globalization, Essays in Marxian Class Analysis. He also writes for the Real World Economics Review blog. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Ruscio.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is all mine.
And I'd like to talk with you about the real state of the American economy, which, as you know, is overshadowed by political gamesmanship between one party that apparently will be rewarded for wrecking the economy and the other that will be punished at the polls for the resulting wreckage. And so let's try and sort through this train wreck and then get to the larger questions of how fast the United States is becoming a plantation economy. First of all,
very quickly.
The answer to that second part is very quickly.
Yes, it is very quickly, but we'll come back to that.
So, how can we get any clarity on this? Because it is so political, and even the politics are fratricidal, not just between the Democrats and the Republicans, but as you know, there's a tremendous rivalry between Eric Cantor and John Boehner, which is the reason why the Republicans can't make a deal.
Correct. I think we always make a mistake when we presume that these political actors, just like economic actors, all are on the same side or have the same interests, right? They're disagreeing about amongst one another. But notwithstanding those agreements, what's happening right now makes absolutely no sense. It's a kind of insanity.
But why did the president buy into the insanity of these people threatening to take the whole temple down like Samson? The idea that the good faith and credit of the United States is up for grabs.
Right.
Why take that seriously?
Well, I don't think it's a political game on Obama's part. I mean, I actually believe politically and economically he thinks he's doing the right thing. I think part of the political analysis of that is Obama, and I live in Chicago, Illinois, so we know Obama from a long time back, is a profoundly centrist politician. And he has defined his public life as a politician precisely in terms of bringing both sides together. So that's, I think, one of the reasons that he bought into this and is engaging in the kinds of negotiations he is right now, basically giving away the store. Economically, he's had an economic team surrounding him from the very beginning, and it continues to this day, that has that economic agenda, that it believes that the problem is a problem of confidence on the part of financiers, and they need to do everything they can, throwing money at them, solving the problem of the deficit in order to, quote, calm the markets. I think it's an insane strategy, but it is the strategy he's adopted from the very beginning. There's no surprise there. So all of the people who are surprised that I don't understand that, in all honesty.
Well, but how did he get into the situation where he's giving away if they're talking about the big deal that he's offered, which right. The Republicans have reneged on? Apparently, mm-hmm. Boehner agreed on it and then changed his mind after he got slammed by Cantor and the Tea Party, the $4 billion deals. But of that $4 billion deals, the best he could have gotten out of the Republicans is to end the tax cuts for the wealthy, which would result in about 800 to 1 trillion in revenues. So
correct.
So there's a ratio here of what Obama's prepared to give away, and in terms of what the Republicans are prepared to give back, is outrageous.
Right. Well, I mean, there are two problems. One, as you noted, is buying into the problem, into the idea that there is a deficit crisis in the first place. Once he did that, once he, Obama, and his economic team bought into that, then I think you have the gamesmanship that is going on right now. Republicans holding the nation hostage, and Obama willing to concede much more than anyone would expect a Democratic president to concede in order to come to an agreement. In all honesty, I think part of that is Obama's own political gamesmanship, offering a lot and having Republicans walk away. That means Obama curries favor with his wealthy backers, but also independent voters. I mean, that's my political analysis. But that's the problem. The problem was to, in the midst of what I tend to call the Second Great Depression, or if you count 1873, the Third Great Depression, it's to even take seriously the fact that the deficit needs to be brought down within the next couple of years. That's insanity. And that's the same kind of insanity going on in Europe right now. The idea that in the midst of, and I think the problem in Greece, Latvia, Ireland, and elsewhere is much more serious in terms of the deficit, the idea that more austerity and privatization are the solution. We're facing the same kind of options here in the United States. It makes no sense when tens of millions of people are unemployed, when they face foreclosures in their homes, when they can't buy goods and services, to even think about cutting government expenditures in order to solve the deficit problem.
Well, David Roussey, as an economist, I'm sure you know that if we were back to normal employment, the deficit would go away. It wouldn't be an issue.
Well, yes. I mean, that's only one of the reasons. I mean, in all honesty, the deficit is there for both short-term and long-term reasons.
Right, but we have a revenue problem, don't we? We have a revenue problem, not a deficit problem.
Well, we've got both, in all honesty. I mean, the depression we're in right now both decreases revenues and increases expenditures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So business activity, people unemployed and so on are down. That decreases revenues. On the other hand, more people are, well, they're not on bread lines, but they're on the unemployment lines. They need food stamps and so on, and that increases expenditure. So the depression itself creates a problem, and precisely government expenditures in that situation are what economists call countercyclical, right?
They're supposed to
kick in to boost economic activity, so the idea of cutting them makes no sense.
Well, this is what
I would only add to your analysis two other factors, and that is the wars and the Bush tax cuts.
Well,
in the short term, about 90% of the current deficits stem from those three factors.
Well, that's what's so bizarre, is that Bush Jr. alone ran up about a third of the entire debt of the nation since its foundation, and Bush Sr. and Jr. combined with Reagan is over a half. But the bizarre thing, though, is that 2 out of 10 dollars in the American pocket come from the government, and they're about to take $37 billion out of that this year. So everything that you would normally do in a recession, where the Obama administration is being forced into the Republican strategy of more austerity.
Absolutely.
And that's the part that is incomprehensible. And what he said in his press conference was that let's make this big deal, and then we can get back to doing jobs. Well, that's exactly the cart before the horse. He should have been talking about jobs from day one. Instead of this ridiculous deal.
Right, and that's become the common sense within Washington. And in all honesty, for somebody like me in economics, it's the common sense within mainstream economics. You would have thought after the crisis, during the continuing depression, that precisely those policies that got us into the problem in the first place, that there'd be at least a bit of self-consciousness, if not a turn to different economic ideas and policies, and in fact there's a kind of revenge of austerity. That's what is, for those of us in economics, extremely perplexing.
Again, I'm speaking with the Notre Dame professor in economics, David Roussio. Some of your recent studies indicate that between January 2009, when Obama took office, and June 2011, with the latest available numbers, total government employment has declined 1.8%, while the decrease for state and local government employment are 0.5% and 2.6% respectively. So the truth of the matter is that normally in a recession and depression, government spending increases and by extension, employment, government employment. We're on the opposite trajectory.
Exactly. No, that's the incredible thing. Aside from that temporary census hiring last year, government employment at all three levels, at the federal level, the state level, and the local level, are decreasing. Exactly what should not be happening. Now, the stimulus program did, in fact, help some local and state governments keep some of that employment, but that's run out now. So not only has government employment decreased when it should have been going in the opposite direction, at least if you compare it to the New Deal and the Work Progress Administration during the 1930s, it's going in the opposite direction. It's actually shrinking, and it's only going to get worse this fall when tens of thousands of teachers are laid off in school districts across the United States. That's part of the current insanity.
So, David Ruscio, this feels like the kind of medieval analogy that bloodletting or bleeding was to medicine. I mean, this is instead of staunching the bleeding and infusing the economic body with more blood or energy or capital or whatever you want to call it, I'm belaboring the metaphor here. We're doing the opposite, right?
Right. Right. And there's from my perspective, there's a kind of short-termism about it, that those in control are going to get theirs, get it quickly, and to hell with everybody else and to hell with the economy and society as a whole. I mean, the society is being rent apart by these policies. But those at the top, the top 1% income earners, who now have 20% of the national income, 35% of the national wealth, they're walking away with theirs. And I think the question for all of us is, why is this going on, and what are the implications? If private enterprises will not generate the jobs necessary, then precisely the government needs to step in, or other kinds of solutions. Somehow we have to be able to get control of some of that surplus in order to create jobs, and that's not what's happening right now.
So here we get back to the plantation economy now.
Right. Yeah, with a little bit of a difference. I mean, when Warren Buffett talked about it, he was concerned about foreign owners of U.S. debt. What we have, I think, I mean, I agree with the analogy, except for different reasons. I think what we've got is a shareholder economy within the United States. What that means is those in control can dictate the terms under which their tenants take their jobs. Wages actually declined last month. Wages have been stagnant now for 35 years. And the question is, what kind of society does that look like when wages are stagnant, people are working more and more hours, more and more family members are working more and more hours? What does that do to family structure? What does that do to the society as a whole? I mean, a perfect example.
Well, I'm afraid we've got to wrap up here just in the last couple of seconds. Does this mean that Chuck Schumer's right, the Republicans are wrecking the economy in order to profit in the 2012 elections?
They may think that. I actually don't think that political strategy works.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think people look at that and say they're on the wrong side. If you watch the polls, Americans are wising up to what's going on right now.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today. Notre Dame economist David Ruscio, who is a professor of economics at Notre Dame University. His books include Economic Representations, both academic and everyday, Postmodern Moments in Modern Economics, and his latest, which will be out soon, Rethinking Planning, Development, and Globalization, Essays in Marxian Class Analysis. He also writes for the Real World Economics Review blog. So what did we learn today on Background Briefing? Well, quite a lot. It actually was a mind-blowing experience today to talk to really people who really know that the government have worked in the trenches, particularly in the intelligence world. Robert Baer, the character that George Clooney won the Academy Award for playing in the movie Syriana, spent more time in the Middle East, speaks Arabic and Farsi, really knows the place. We talked about the Arab Spring, all the hope that's embodied in the change there. He agreed that eventually all these regimes would go. We talked a bit about the Syrian regime, but he also warned about how all of the hope and progress could be dashed by Netanyahu attacking Iran, which he says is actually not a bluff. It's a real thing. This is a plan. Already, the special forces in the United States have been put on alert to expect this to happen. He believes it will happen. It will happen probably in September before the Palestinian statehood vote in the United Nations. He thinks that Obama will go along with it. He doesn't have the cojones to stop it because he's so much facing an election year, and he doesn't want to lose AIPAC's support. And essentially, Israel does what it wants to do, even though the United States military apparently is terrified. And already, Panetta, in his trip to Iraq, talked about how Iran is arming the Shiite militias and how afraid he is of retaliation against us in that part of the world where the United States is particularly vulnerable. So this was a very, very chilling scenario. And I kept trying to pin him down, but basically his source for this, and it's amazing to think that this is not being discussed in the American press, but it is being discussed in the Israeli press. His source for this is the former head of Mossad, Maya Dagan, and the chief of staff of Israel military, General Ashkenazi. They have gone public in Israel warning that Netanyahu's losing it and is going to do this. And they think it's a catastrophe too. And of course, it will be a catastrophe for the United States because we will end up on the wrong side of history. And that will have enormous long-term consequences for us. We've continued the conversation with Roger Morris, who served on the National Security Councils under Nixon and Johnson and quit over the bombing of Cambodia. He's just completed a book, Between the Graves, about the history of U.S. Relations with Afghanistan, both in terms of covert activity and policy, based on thousands of previously secret documents. It's in the hands of lawyers now, but he really does know his stuff. He agreed entirely with Bob Baer and thought that this was really going to happen, and really got into why it is that Obama simply will not be able to stop it. The incredible influence of Israel in with Biden being in AIPAC's pocket, Kerry, Donald, the National Security Advisor, and just generally the idea that Obama's going to just have to go along with it, which is unfortunately the Israeli strategy. They'll just go ahead and do it, and the U.S. will be stuck with the consequences, and clearly would have to join in on Israel's side, which of course will be terribly damaging to prospects for the U.S. Benefiting from the Arab Spring, which will be set back. And then finally, we talk with the great economist David Ruscio. Really interesting conversation about the real nature of the economy, which is totally politicized now and paralyzed by political gamesmanship, but tremendous insight. I really highly recommend it. You listen to David Ruscio's analysis, one of the best and most cogent that I've heard. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank some of my producers, Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. Our theme music is One Time, One Night by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. A quiet voice.